All right, we'll be in the book of Joshua tonight. Joshua fought the battle of Jericho. One of my sisters has been texting me over the last few days, asking me Bible questions from the book of Joshua. Asked me questions about Caleb and his inheritance, about the different tribes. I guess in her Bible reading, she's in the book of Joshua. So she was asking me these questions, and I texted her the answer to one of them today, and I said, by the way, I'm teaching on the book of Joshua tonight. I'm making a message right now as we speak. I'm getting a lesson ready. I'll email it to you when I'm done. And she thought I did Joshua just because she was asking questions. And isn't that something how the Lord works that out, though? She was asking questions right at the same time that we were getting ready for Joshua. So I don't know that this would answer any of her questions, but this might bring up more questions than answer questions. We're going to look at the book of Joshua tonight. We get to the sixth book of the Old Testament. We've looked at Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, Deuteronomy, the five books of Moses, and we saw that those five books are in a chronological order, starting with Genesis, beginnings, then Exodus as they came out of Egypt. Leviticus was all the rules and all of the customs that God gave upon them as they worshiped Him in the wilderness. Numbers was the numbering of Genesis, Leviticus. Numbers was the numbers of the tribes and their encampment around the tabernacle as they're going through the wilderness. Deuteronomy was the 52 days we saw of giving the law to them. And now we come to the book of Joshua, and Joshua is the continuation of this story that has begun. It is the sequel. All right, Genesis, Exodus, Leviticus, Numbers, and Deuteronomy. In fact, 17 books of history in the Old Testament, the first 17 books. So we're just getting a running story going right through. And so, again, the Bible is in an orderly fashion. The Jewish Bible does not begin with these same books. The Jewish Bible is in a different order, but God has so led our Bible to be placed in such an order where it's in this system chronologically, because that's the way we think. And so where it makes it easy to follow. You're just reading the story as you go right through. So we get to the book of Joshua. We continue the story of the journey of the children of Israel out of Egypt and into the promised land. God said to Abraham in Genesis 12, I'll give you a land. I'll give you a place. And every place you set your foot, that will be yours. Well, it's taken all the way to the book of Joshua for them to actually get into that land. They went into bondage in Egypt. And after 400 years, finally got out of there and made their journey now for 40 years. Again, a journey that should have taken 40 days. If you look at the map from where they came out of Egypt and the roundabout way that they got all the way up into Kadesh Barnea and to the Promised Land, that was about a 40-day walk, a 40-day march for the children of Israel. But because of their disobedience and their murmuring, it took them 40 years. I wonder how long it takes us to get some things done in our life, because we're a bit too busy wandering, too busy going in circles and not being obedient to God and not doing what He says, and so we're not getting where we're supposed to get soon enough. We have the tendency of blaming God. God, why? God, why? God, why? And I wonder if God doesn't say, well, dummy. That's how He talks to me anyway, because He has to. Well, dummy, here's why. Look at what you're doing. So the children of Israel are a picture to you and I of disobedience. And disobedience prolongs us getting to where God wants us to be. But finally in Joshua, they get to get into this promised land. Number one in our outline here, as we look at the book of Joshua, it was written by, and I know I'm going to astound you with my deep Bible knowledge right now, it was written by Joshua. Now that seems pretty simple, doesn't it? And yet at the same time, if you've ever read scholarship, they all question the authorship of the book of Joshua. One of the reasons is, it says in verse 1, now after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it came to pass that the Lord spake unto Joshua, the son of Nun, Moses' minister, saying, Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore go, arise, if Joshua had written it, why didn't he say that the Lord spake unto me, the son of Nun, Moses' minister? Or go down to verse number 10. Then Joshua commanded the officers of the people. Why didn't it say, then I commanded the officers of the people? If it's written by Joshua, why is the name Joshua given in it? And kind of getting ahead in our notes there a little bit, the name Joshua appears 168 times in the book of Joshua, which would not be unusual other than the fact he's saying Joshua did this and Joshua did that and Joshua went here and Joshua went there. Well, if he's writing it, why isn't I went here and I went there and the Lord said to me, why is it in the third person? Now, we saw the same thing, if you remember, when we studied the book of Exodus written by Moses, and yet Moses said all the way through it, I forget how many times it was there, I think it was much more than these 168 times, that Moses said, Moses went here, and Moses did that, and Moses said this, and Moses said that. Moses did the same thing. And the same thing we learned about the book of Exodus, for the reason Moses did that, is the reason for the book of Joshua. If they were writing an autobiography, if they were writing the story of their life, they would say, here's what I did, and here's where I went, and here's what I said, and here's what happened to me. They would use those personal pronouns, I and my and me. But they're not writing an autobiography. They are writing a history book for the children of Israel. They're writing a history book for the children, so that years later and ages later, somebody can go back and read and said, the Lord spake to Joshua, and Joshua did this, and Joshua commanded them to do that. They're going to read it as a history book, not as a biography about a person that they wrote about themselves. I love history. My daughter just came home with a brand new history book for second semester. I'm way ahead of her. All right, she's only on page 30 or something. I'm way ahead. I'm about 1/6 through the book already. I love reading those histories. That's what the book of Joshua is. It's a history for the children of Israel to go back and read about how they got in the promised land. What happened when their forefathers came into the promised land. All these stories about Rahab and Achan and all these things are recorded. So Joshua is recording all of these, not as he's writing about himself, but writing an actual history so that the later generations can go back and read it. So there's no problem with him speaking in the third person because he's writing a history. Number two, Joshua was chosen by God, and this is an easy one, to fill the shoes of Moses. Any volunteers? How'd you like to have been the guy that followed Moses? We talk often, us preachers, we talk about different pastors that have started great works and great churches in the United States, and you wouldn't want to be the guy that goes in after them and blows the whole thing. How'd you like to be Joshua following Moses, who wrote the first five books of the Bible? Who is such an austere man that even in the New Testament, they're referring to him. And everything about him, the law given to him, everything about him, that the great man Moses. And now you're the guy that's going to take over for him. That's the position Joshua's in. And yet God encourages him. Notice in these verses, verse 2 and 3 of chapter 1. Here's what the Lord said. Moses, my servant, is dead. Now therefore arise, go over this Jordan, thou and all this people, into the land which I do give to them, even to the children of Israel. Every place that the sole of your foot shall tread upon, that have I given unto you, as I said unto Moses. All right? He's promising that he's going to do for him what he did for Moses. Verse 5. There shall not any man be able to stand before thee all the days of thy life. That would be comforting, wouldn't it? Remember the story about those that confronted Moses? Dathan and Abiram, they challenged Moses. God opened up the earth and swallowed him right down into it. Well, now he's saying to Joshua, Joshua, as I was with Moses, so I'm going to be with you, and no man shall stand against thee. It's a good thing Moses is a humble fellow, because he could really use that if he wanted to. But the God says at the end of verse 5, as I was with Moses, so will I be with thee. I will not fail thee, nor forsake thee. And notice what he tells Joshua three times here, right at the same time that he's giving this commission. He says in verse 3, be strong and of a good courage. Then he says again in verse 7, only be thou strong and very courageous. Then he says in verse 9, have not I commanded thee, be strong and of a good courage? I've not met Joshua, and I hope what I'm about to say will not make me have to apologize to him when I see him in heaven. But I think he had a problem with being courageous. That's why God had to tell him 3 times, be strong and of a good courage. The Lord doesn't usually have to say that to people that already have those characteristics. He had to encourage Joshua in saying, Joshua, I'll be with you. It's the same thing he had to say with Moses. Moses, I'll be with your mouth. I'll give you the things to say. When Moses said, I'm not eloquent of speech, God said, I've called you, I'll equip you. And here for Joshua, he says the same thing. As I was with Moses, so I'll be with you. I've called you, I'll equip you. That's a wonderful promise, because it's a promise that you and I can apply to ourselves today also. That whatever God calls us to do in His service, He will equip us to do it. God has not called me to play the piano. And you should be thankful. Unless you like chopsticks. Because God gives the ability to those to whom He calls. The challenge there is that many times God gives abilities to people that they do not use. It'd be terrible for God to say, I've equipped you to follow Moses. I'll make you courageous and strong. And if he did those things and Joshua did not do what God equipped him to do, it would be a sad story. Not just for the children of Israel. God probably would have raised somebody else up, but it'd have been sad for Joshua, because he'd have been sat on the shelf. We need to make sure we do what God equips us to do. Joshua was chosen by God to fill the shoes of Moses. Number 3. There's a wonderful contrast in the book of Joshua between these two men. Moses, who passes off the scene, and Joshua that comes onto the scene. Moses brought them, here's our word, out of Egypt. You say, well, that's so simple. Yes, it is, but it's so meaningful. Moses brought them out of Egypt. But Moses couldn't take them into Canaan. Moses brought them out of Egypt, but it's Joshua that took them into Canaan. The one that brought them out is not the one that took them in. We can talk about the different reasons for that, but we'll get to that here in the third point under this number 3. Notice, second of all, our same words, Moses led them out through the parting of the Red Sea. Exodus chapter 14. When they were leaving the land of Egypt, they got to the Red Sea and they had nowhere to go. They were boxed in. Pharaoh said, the God of Israel is a terrible general. Now that's not in the Bible, that's Yul Brynner. In the movie The Ten Commandments, who played Pharaoh? That's what he said in that, all right? But God took him to the Red Sea and they had nowhere to go. But he said, Moses, stretch out the rod. And when he did, the waters parted and they walked across. They were led out of Egypt by the parting of the Red Sea. Now in the book of Joshua, they get to the promised land. They're right here at the border. They're looking across the River Jordan. But how are they going to get over there? And we notice in Joshua chapter 3, verse 17, where's our reference? Verse 13 to 17 of the book of Joshua, God parts the River Jordan so that they can go across. It shall come to pass, it says in Joshua 3:13, it shall come to pass as soon as the soles of the feet of the priests that bear the ark of the Lord and the Lord of all the earth shall rest in the waters of Jordan, that the waters of Jordan shall be cut off from the waters that come down from above, and they shall stand upon an heap. Just as they did in the crossing of the Red Sea, the River Jordan is the same thing. Moses led them out, God parted the water. Joshua leads them in, God parts the water. There's the contrast between the two. One leading out, one leading in. The beautiful difference about this is simply this. Moses, and this is our next thing, Moses represents the law. Moses in the book of Joshua is a picture of the law. To him, the law was given. The Ten Commandments on the mountain, the 600 plus commandments in the book of Deuteronomy. Moses is the epitome of the law. The law could not get them in. The law could not get them into the promised land. The law had to die before they could get into the promised land. And someone else had to step in and take that place. And that person was Joshua. Joshua pictures the Lord Jesus Christ. In fact, you'll see there in the notes that the name Joshua in the Old Testament is the same as the name Jesus in the New Testament. In fact, twice in the Bible, we'll not turn there, but in Acts chapter 7, verse 45, when Stephen is preaching to the elders of Israel, to the Jewish leaders, the Pharisees, when he's preaching, he talks about how Jesus led them through those waters back at the Jordan River. Well, it wasn't Jesus, it was Joshua. It's the same name. And Stephen even uses it in Acts chapter 7. Same thing is true in Hebrews chapter 4. The story is told about Joshua, but in the New Testament his name is called Jesus because the name Joshua means Jehovah saves. The name Jesus means Jehovah saves. So it's the same name in Hebrew and in New Testament in Greek, but again, that's the name given to Jesus at that time. So there's the picture there that Moses and the law could take them out of Egypt, but could not bring them into Canaan. I like what it says, and we've got the reference here, Galatians chapter 3 and verse 24. Galatians 3:24 says this, "And the law was our schoolmaster to bring us unto Christ." The law was our schoolmaster to bring us unto Christ. The law could straighten you out. It could bring you out of Egypt. It could make you different from everybody else. Why? Because you have no gods beside Him. Not take the name of the Lord thy God in vain. Not make unto thee any graven image. The law could make you different from the rest of the world. That's the picture of Egypt. But the law couldn't bring you into Canaan. The law was our schoolmaster to bring us to Christ. And Joshua is the picture of Jesus in the book of Joshua, taking us into that promised land. Number 4. The book of Joshua begins with the death of Moses. Chapter 1. Now after the death of Moses, Moses died at the end of the book of Deuteronomy. And so after the death of Moses, the servant of the Lord, it begins with the death of Moses and ends with the death of Joshua. The last 5 verses in the book of Joshua, and I think I missed this at the beginning. Joshua is the author of the book of Joshua except for the last 5 verses. Now, if you wonder why I would say that, well, the last 5 verses, verse 29, "It came to pass after these things that Joshua the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, died, being 110 years old. And they buried him in the border of the inheritance." It had been hard for Joshua to write that he was dead, that he died and that he was buried. "And Israel served the Lord all the days of Joshua and all the days of the elders." So these last 5 verses were not written by Joshua, but the book ends with Joshua. As I read and researched, they tell me that the one that wrote the last 5 verses is Phinehas, who is mentioned there in verse number 33. "And Eleazar the son of Aaron died, and they buried him in the hill that pertained to Phinehas his son." The Bible doesn't state that. We don't know who wrote the last 5 verses, but it's not a problem. The book begins and ends with death. The death of Moses to the death of Joshua. It covers a period of 25 years. I spent a lot of time trying to figure out how long the book of Joshua lasted. Well, because I knew how old Moses was when he died. The Bible tells me he's 120 years old. I know how old Joshua was when he died. He was 110 years old. The end of Joshua says that. But there's an age difference between the two. So I went to the Scofield Reference Bible and Usher's Chronology, and I looked up the dates on that. Then I went online and Googled it and typed up the dates of that, and I came up with a mess. And I spent all this time trying, all right, I know that Moses spent 40 years in Egypt at the beginning, then 40 years in exile, and then 40 years in Egypt and in that land before they got out. And so I know how, or the wilderness, the 40 years in the wilderness. I know how this breaks up. So where did Joshua come in? And the nearest I could figure out, and again, going with Usher's Chronology, is that Joshua was born 5 years after Moses got kicked out of Egypt or fled out of Egypt. He was born there. So anyways, it comes out with it. And you know what I thought the whole time? I thought, Lord, why didn't you make this clear to understand? Why can't I figure this out better? And I'm spending all this time and writing down all these notes and looking up all this stuff. And at the end of it, you know what I thought? I thought the Lord's probably sitting out of here. Why are you wasting your time with that? I think he tells me that a lot. Why are you wasting your time with that? So I'm going with Usher's chronology. It's 25 years from the death of Moses, 25 years in the book of Joshua, that he led them into the promised land. They got their inheritance. They got settled in. And then Joshua passes off of the scene. Number 5. The book of Joshua, and this is kind of important. The book of Joshua is a book of conflict and conquest. Two words that can describe it. Struggles, difficulties, conflict and conquest. They get to the promised land, but there's no welcome mat out there. There's no ticker tape parade. There's no marching band saying, welcome children of Israel to the land flowing with milk and honey. No, they get there and you know what they find? The Amorites and the Hittites and the Canaanites and the Jebusites have all moved into that land since Abraham. We had it way back in Genesis 12. When Jacob and all the children of Israel went into Egypt at the end of the book, somebody else, some squatters went in there, and all these ites are in there now. All these ites are in there possessing the land, and when they get back, they don't want to give it up. And so now they have to conquer the land to be able to move in it. Now, here's why we say this. We preach many times, or we teach many times, that Canaan is a picture of heaven. That the promised land, a rest from the wilderness wandering. Joshua, Jesus, led them in. A land flowing with milk and honey. We talk about that as being a picture of heaven. And we don't necessarily need to stop doing that. One of my favorite gospel songs I've not heard in a long time. I won't have to cross Jordan alone. Jesus died for my sins to atone. In the darkness I see, He is waiting for me. I don't have to cross Jordan alone. Crossing Jordan is what Joshua does going into the promised land. Jordan, a picture of death, the River Jordan, and Canaan, a picture of getting to heaven when we die. That's all nice, but it's really not a perfect type. And I would say this, there are no perfect types in the Bible. The only perfect thing is the real thing. We talk about all these men in the Old Testament being a type. Joseph was a type of Jesus. All right, hated by his brethren, delivered, put in prison, all that kind of stuff. But he's not a perfect type because Jesus didn't have 11 brothers and a sister. All right, so it's not a perfect type. Well, Canaan is not a perfect type of heaven simply because of this. There were struggles. There were battles. There were fightings. There was deceit. On a couple of different, okay, with Achan and with the Gibeonites, there's a lot of struggles. All right, so Canaan more likely is a picture of the Christian life. Canaan is a picture of Jesus leading us right now through our Canaan, through our struggles, through our difficulties, through our battles. Thank God, through our victories, but even through our defeats. So that's what the book of Joshua shows us. It's a book about conflict and conquest. You say, why do I have to go through the struggles and difficulties I do? Because you're walking through the land of Canaan. God, the Lord is leading you through, but you're not to the other side yet. Number 6. It is a book of miracles. It is a book of miracles. We'll not turn to it, but in chapter 6 and verse 20, the walls came a tumbling down. If you don't think that's a miracle, try it. Go march around the church. One time for 6 days, and on the seventh time, march around 7 times and blow a trumpet and see if the building falls down. If it does, I'm calling the insurance agent right away. But I doubt it's going to happen. That was a miracle. I love how the skeptics try to explain miracles away. I remember reading one time that the reason it was is because the ground was so unsure there that the more they marched around, the more unsettled the ground got. And on the seventh day, when they blew the trumpets and they shouted, That very sound, just like Aretha Franklin hitting that high note, breaking the glass. That very sound just made the walls come tumbling down. How ridiculous. Much easier to believe that God caused the walls to fall down. Because it all fell down except one little part where there was a scarlet thread hanging out. Remember that story? Well, how did that one just not fall down with all? Oh, the ground there was, okay. It's a book of miracles. Also, the sun standing still. All right? Make the sun stand still over in chapter 10, verse 12. So it's a time of miracles, but it's also a book of mistakes. Now, I just described your life. It's a book of miracles, seeing the hand of God doing some wonderful things, and it's a book of mistakes. Chapter 7, we read about Achan's trespass and the thing about Ai, the city of Ai, when they tried to conquer it, they were defeated. The reason was is because Ai had taken some stuff, or Achan had taken some stuff for himself and tried to lie and cover it up. Oh no, we never do things like that. We read about the treaty with the Gibeonites. They tricked Joshua. They got moldy bread and they got some old bottles of wine and packed it in their camels and in their creatures and what came in there, making it look like they came from a far land. Old dirty clothes and worn out sandals, and said, "We're come from a far land. Make a pact with us that you will not destroy us." And Joshua said, "Okay, we won't do that." Then he found out they lived right around the corner. And they were in the promised land. They were one of the groups they were supposed to run out, but Joshua had made a promise. He didn't pray before he made that agreement with them. He made a mistake. And the Gibeonites were allowed to stay in the land because he made a mistake by giving them that promise. They tricked him. And then the third thing is they failed to completely clear out the land. Chapter 15, I'll read that one. Chapter 15 and verse 23. That doesn't sound like the right verse. It's 63. Chapter 15 and verse 63, if you can change that number there. As for the Jebusites, the inhabitants of Jerusalem, the children of Judah could not drive them out, but the Jebusites dwell with the children of Judah at Jerusalem unto this day. They failed to drive out the Jebusites. Chapter 16 and verse 10. Talking about the Ephraimites, and they drave not out the Canaanites that dwelt in Gezer, but the Canaanites dwelt among the Ephraimites unto this day and serve under tribute. So there's some people in the promised land that they were supposed to just clean out, get them all out of there. Their idolatry, their wickedness, their immorality. God said, "I want them out of there," but Israel did not drive them all out, and there's many more than that. And that came back to haunt them later. The idolatry of those people, the immorality of them came back to haunt them later on. So it's a book of conflict and conquest, a book of miracles and mistakes. It's just like our Christian life. Some key words in the book of Joshua, and this helps us to understand again the overall context of what's going on. The word possess, possessed, and possession appear a total of 24 times. All right, possess is 6 times, possess 6 times, and possession 12 times. Because that's what the book of Joshua is about. The children of Israel possessing the land. Possessing the land. They got out of Egypt in Exodus. They've been marching all this time for 40 years. They end up at the end of Numbers and Deuteronomy, right there at the Jordan River, ready to cross over. And in the book of Joshua, they finally go in and possess the land. The word inheritance appears 58 times. The tribe of Reuben, the tribe of Gad, the tribe of Judah, the tribe of Issachar, they all get their inheritance now in this promised land. And then the word land appears 87 times. This is the gist, this is the importance of the book of Joshua, them getting into the land and inheriting their possessions. All right, that's why these three words are very key. That brings us to the key verse in Joshua. And that key verse is chapter 1, verse 11, the second half or the last part of the verse, which says, "Go in to possess the land which the Lord your God giveth you to possess it." That is the theme of the book of Joshua, going in to possess the land. It's theirs. They haven't been there for many generations. But God is leading them back in there, and he says, go in and possess it. An overview of the book of Joshua. Number one, in chapters 1-5, it's claiming the land. That's what they do in the first five chapters. They claim the land. Lord tells them to go in and get all that he has prepared for them. Sanctify yourselves, for tomorrow the Lord will do wonders among you. Chapter 3 and verse 5. So they're getting ready to go in and to take that land. Claiming the land. Number two, conquering the land. Conquering the land. One of the best tools in understanding the Bible is an atlas or a Bible map. Because it really helps to bring things out. Anytime you're studying history, looking at the discovery of America and where the ships came from and Spain going around and going into Mexico and all these, if you look at maps and see how they did it, it gives a lot of understanding to it. And if you could see the conquest or the conquering of the land, Israel as they came out of Egypt down south and went around in a circle and then finally got to Kadesh Barnea and they ended up on the east side of the Jordan River. And they had to cross the Jordan River into the west to get into the promised land. And as they went across in the middle between the Sea of Galilee and the Dead Sea down there, as they went in across the middle, they went in the center of the promised land. And so you see under the conquering of the land, letter A is the central campaign. Alright, they had three wars they had to fight to get the inhabitants out of the land, to get the idolaters out, to get the immorality out. So they started in the center. They attacked from the center as they crossed in. And those were the cities of Jericho that we read about, the walls falling down, and Ai. Ai is where they were defeated the first time and had to go back a second time after they got right with God and defeated it. So they moved into the center part from the east to the west and conquered the middle of the land. But now they've got the land north and the land south. So letter B, in chapters 9 and 10, they moved down and conquered the southern part of the promised land. And those are the cities of Gibeon, Azekah, and Makkedah. And you'll read about those in those three chapters, or those two chapters. They go in and conquer the center, then they go down to the south, then they go to the north. The wonderful, beautiful climate of the north, all right? They go up there in chapter 11 and 12 and they defeat Zidon and Misreph, yeah, that guy, and Mizpah and Hazor and Hebron and Debir and Anab. All these different battles are listed in the book of Joshua as they went into the central region, the southern part, the northern part, fought all these battles, got all these lands, and finally conquered the land so that they can move into it. That brings us to number three, colonizing the land. Colonizing the land. Now that they've conquered it, now they can move into it. If you know the story of the book of Joshua, there's 2.5 tribes, Gad and Reuben, and half of the tribe of Manasseh. And we're going to talk about that tribe in just a moment. Manasseh was one of the sons of Joseph. So Gad and Reuben and half the tribe of Manasseh, before they crossed the Jordan to go into the promised land, those 2.5 tribes liked the land on the east side of Jordan so much, they said, we don't want an inheritance over there. We want this land over here. So Joshua told them, if you'll go in and fight with us to kick out all the inhabitants of this land, then when that's done, we'll let you come back over on the east side and live over here. So we see this, that the colonizing of the land in chapter 13, it talks about those tribes that got the east side of the Jordan River. And that's Reuben, Gad, and half of the tribe of Manasseh. The tribe of Manasseh's got half of them wanted to stay on one side and half of them wanted to go to the other. They must have been the Baptists in the group. They couldn't agree on it. Half of them wanted to stay on one side, half of them wanted to stay on the other side. So then chapters 14 to 19, we read about the other 9.5 tribes that actually went into the promised land and got their inheritance from Reuben in the south to Judah above that, and then Ephraim, Issachar, Gad, all those going all the way up to the north to Asher. All of them got their inheritance in the land. Now they've got this whole big piece of property that belongs to them. That whole big piece of property that you look on a map and is about the size of the state of Rhode Island, surrounded by Jordan and Syria and Turkey and all those other countries over there. That was their land given to them by God. Now, it actually is bigger than what the little map shows, because all that you keep hearing about Palestine and Lebanon and all that, no, that's the land of Canaan. That's the land that God gave to the children of Israel way back when. Somebody else moved in and poached it, but it belongs to Israel. One of these days, they're going to get it all back, no matter what the United Nations says about it. All right, they're going to go back in there. So they colonized it, the east side, the west side. And then in chapters 20 and 21, the Levites, the priestly class, did not get an inheritance. All right, they're not given any land as an inheritance. The Lord, their God, is their inheritance. And so they are given 48 cities sprinkled out with among all the different tribes, because that's who they're going to minister to. So in chapter 20 and 21, we read about these 48 cities given to the Levites, so that they're among the Reubenites, among the Gadites, among the Ephraimites, among the Asherites, among them in these different cities. And from there, they minister to the tribes of Israel. Six of those cities listed are also, as we call it, cities of refuge. All right, cities of refuge. And those six cities of refuge were for there. If someone accidentally killed someone else, they were allowed to flee to that city of refuge and be protected there because they were innocent. And the judges would come, and if it turned out they weren't innocent, they had killed the person on purpose, well, they were delivered to the hand of the right person. But if they inspected and said, no, this was an accident, it was an accidental thing, they were allowed to stay in that city of refuge and be protected there. And those six cities are part of the 48 that were given to the Levites. And they managed those places. So the colonizing of the land in chapter 13 to verse 22. Then lastly, number four, consecration. Consecration in the land. The last two chapters, chapter 23 and chapter 24. Chapter 23 and most of chapter 24 is the declaration of Joshua. He gives his parting words. The end of Joshua 23 verse 1 says, Joshua waxed old and stricken in age. Man, we've come a long way, haven't we? Joshua's only 110 years old. Only. He's only 110 years old. But you know, we've not come that far from where they lived 600 years and 700 years and 800 years and 969 years, Methuselah. And we've come all the way down to now, a guy 110 is waxed old in years. He's waxed old and stricken in age, and he gives them a reminder, verse 5, the Lord your God shall expel them from before you and drive them out of your sight, and ye shall possess their land. Verse 6, be ye therefore very courageous. Where'd Joshua get that word? He's telling the children of Israel, be thou very courageous. The same thing God told him back in chapter 1. Now he's passing on to them. And then verse 11, I'll point attention to because I've got a circle, and that's my life verse. As a missionary, we travel to churches a lot, and I'd go preach, and people come up and ask me to sign their Bible and write my life verse in it, and I'd always write Joshua 23:11. It was the challenge of Joshua to the children of Israel as he was departing. And he said, take good heed therefore unto yourselves that you love the Lord your God. And I've made that my life verse. I like that verse. All right. You know, Joshua also said, as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. Joshua chapter 24 and verse 11. You cannot serve God and mammon. You cannot serve two things. We will serve the Lord. He said, verse 15, choose you this day, chapter 24, verse 15, choose you this day whom you'll serve, whether the gods which your fathers served that were on the other side of the flood or the gods of the Amorites in whom you land you dwell. But as for me and my house, we will serve the Lord. The declaration of Joshua, then the last five verses, the death of Joshua. Joshua, the son of Nun, the servant of the Lord, verse 29, died being 110 years old, and they buried him in the border of the inheritance in Timnath-Serah. The book of Joshua, taking us from Moses, from the law, to Joshua, into the promised land. Now we'll get to the book of Judges next week and find out what chaos ensues as they are finally in that promised land, that place that God gave him. All is not well. All is not taken care of. There's still a lot of problems. You know why? Because they're still human. And as long as we're down here, there's still going to be problems and difficulties. It's going to be conflict and conquest. It's going to be miracles and mistakes until we get to the other side. Let's stand together tonight with our heads bowed and our eyes closed.